Have you ever wondered what's the best way to cook over a fire and what type of wood to use? Annabelle Langbein, creator of A Free Range Life, says it's something that they often do at home. And she joins me now with some handy tips and to share a recipe too. Hi, Annabelle.
Hi, Jesse. Yeah.
Really pleased to chat to you. Yeah. Definitely. Great thinking. Remind us how you're doing in your bubble. We talked to you a couple of weeks ago about some of the Instagram posting with your daughter, but how are you guys getting on?
Yeah, not too bad. Still doing that. I've been actually turning into a squirrel down here because it's going to get very cold quite soon. So everything that is ready to harvest is being turned into preserves and things for the freezer and things for jars. And now I can't even get into the freezer this summer.
Yeah, freezer management is something we're all learning at these in these difficult times. And you say you're thinking about cooking over a fire, I suppose, because the weather's getting cooler and I don't know, it takes a bit more time, doesn't it? You're not going to start a fire when you get home from work at 6 p.m.
Yeah, exactly. And once you've kind of done it, we do it here even in the winter. We cook over the fire inside. Just because it gives you this really quite a simple rhythm to your day and you've got the fire on anyway. The whole trick is that you need to build quite a big fire and start about an hour ahead of time. And then when you've built up a big bed of embers, don't pull the whole thing apart. Just shovel some embers over under where you want to cook and then keep the fire going, because then if you're going to cook a lot of food, you can keep shoveling embers, or otherwise if you want to have a fire at the end of it all and not be sitting in the cold, you haven't used it all up.
Yeah, you want some constant heat in both places, right? The original fire and where you're doing your cooking. Yeah. Do you have some help, or is it usually you doing the handiwork?
No, he's usually really good at this. So he's the king of fire cooking, and I've been watching him a lot because there is more to it. You actually do have to be present and engage your senses. It's not like you can turn the oven on to sort of, you know, 250 and walk away. So what it is, you know, to tell if the heat is going to be hot enough, you use your hand, and you know that once you put your hand over the level that you're cooking at, you count to three. If you can count any longer than three, it's not hot enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can only count to one, it's too hot.
Okay, yeah, that's good. What sort of wood do you use?
Well, you do have to be quite fussy about not using any treated wood, any plywood, anything with any chemicals or paint on it. And also in New Zealand, there are a couple of poisonous woods. Oleander is a definite no-no, and so is bay, because it's got lots of arsenic in it. And there was a thing years ago where a woman in somewhere, Rotorua or somewhere, ended up, all these scientists ended up dying at her lunch because she'd skewered the kebabs with oleander wood.
Oh, my gosh.
But don't use oleander wood.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. But manuka is good.
Manuka is really good, and any old fruit wood or grape prunings, any of those fruit woods are very dense and they're quite aromatic as well. And say even if you're not going to the trouble of lighting a fire, you can actually make your regular, you know, like gas barbecue food taste better just by throwing some sprigs of rosemary on it to sweeten it. They'll release aromatic oils into the sort of smoky diaspora of the barbecue.
And you have offered, for people lucky enough to have access to a good butcher, you've offered to talk us through some different cuts of beef today, which I really appreciate. You know, I'm a food writer, and even I get a little bit confused about which is which.
And they're much cheaper, a lot of these cuts.
Yeah, right. You don't need to go for eye fillet or scotch or sirloin.
But don't want to, because they don't have nearly as much flavour.
Uh-huh.
And for something like a hanger steak, is also known as an omelette, and the butchers used to hang on to them themselves because they're so good. And I think it's the intercostal muscle that you get, you know, in between the brisket and the flank. And so it doesn't look that appealing. It sort of looks quite dense, but it is so tasty. And you just have to cook all of these cuts, whether it's skirt steak or hanger steak or flat iron is another really good one, tri-tip. You've got to cook them on the rare to medium rare side. They're not going to be any good if you want them well done, because they don't often have as much fat, and also the if they're rare, they're going to be juicy. So that's what you want.
Yeah. Okay. And you might be getting
this. Every animal has them, so you should be able to ask the butcher or even ask the supermarket.
You might be getting to this, but one thing I noticed with these sorts of cuts is how important it is. I mean, you will have heard before, cut them across the grain, but also I find some of them you want to go super thin.
Yes, super thin. Because, and always across the grain, because then the amount of muscle fibre that you're eating, you've cut across it rather than with it, so you're not chewing, per se.
Yeah.
If you look at them from a flavour profile, a fillet steak might be a 4, whereas something like a flat iron might be an 8 or 9. So they're really tasty because they are muscle cuts, so they've got lots of red blood cells in them.
Tell us about flat iron.
Flat iron. I like flat iron. So it's got this, you never buy it as a whole steak. It's got this silver skin that runs right through the middle. And so when you buy it, it's already been separated. So they've cleaned the top and the bottom, and it's kind of got that shape. It's a shape like an antique iron with its handle missing. So it's sort of a long triangle. And it comes from the shoulder. And they call it the clod, but it's actually, if you were going to put a cape on, it's that area around the top of, between the neck and the top of the shoulder.
Okay, yeah. And it's no good for slow cooking.
No, it's bizarrely, because often when things have got, like the cross-cut blade, it's got that that little bit of silver skin that runs through, but in fact that isn't silver skin, the one in the cross-cut blade. That's actually, it's like beef cheek, what's it called? And then when you cook it, it breaks down into collagen, so it's really tender.
Yeah, you know, I made a... Oh, what's it called? A beef rendang with cross-cut blade last week. And, man, it was so good. Cross-cut blade.
It's the best cut for a casserole, honestly. Yeah. Or a shin, you know, because it's got the same muscle structure. And, and you know, people think, oh, I'm going to spoil everyone. I'm going to make, you know, put topside into, well, not topside, you know, rump steak into a casserole. And it's stupid because you need that, like a cheek, you need the muscliest cut that's done lots of work, because then all of that muscle will give you, it breaks down and you get that lovely, it's the collagen that breaks down into gelatin and gives you that kind of quite unctuous texture.
Yeah, it was particularly noticeable with this cross cut I did last week. A couple of others you're going to introduce us to, a skirt steak.
Skirt steak. And, you know, skirt steak used to be skirt steak and gravy beef. You know, you'd get it for the dog probably, but it's, it's a very long cut, and it's got a strong muscle grain, and I think we usually hear by the outer one. The inner one is cheaper, and often in America you see that used for fajitas. And they are fattier than, skirt steak is a fattier cut, it's got more intramuscular fat than, say, something like the hanger steak.
Okay.
And marinates really well, but fantastic for fajitas or any kind of barbecue and stir fry. Like, if you wanted to make what's that lovely Korean dish where you do with sesame and the...
Yes.
Really good with skirt steak.
Sorry, it's gone. That's right, we'll find it. The other one you were going to mention was tri-tip steak, which is a bit more flexible still, grilled, roasted, or smoked, sauté, stir-fry. Let's have your recipe, because I can't wait for people to hear how to do this, because I predict that many of them will be making it this weekend.
Well, it's a super easy idea, because really what you do is you make up a salad in a bowl, and you get your steak, whatever kind that you want to use, and you marinate. You mix your steak with a little bit of olive oil, balsamic vinegar, and Dijon mustard, because I'm going for a Mediterranean kind of salad here. And then while it's marinating, cut up some tomatoes, as many as you can. I usually use about 100 grams a person because I like it tomatoey. And I do spring onion and red onion, and roasted red peppers really nice in there, Kalamata olives. And I put salad leaves, but it's really pretty flexible. I mean, even if you wanted to make it go further, you could put roast pumpkin and probably pumpkin, and I was going to say maybe sweet potato. Probably wouldn't put potatoes in there. And then I make a dressing with Kalamata olives, and I do 1/4 cup of Kalamata olives and 2 tablespoons of capers and 3 tablespoons of olive oil and 1 tablespoon of white wine vinegar or lemon juice and some pepper. And actually sometimes I put garlic in there as well.
Yeah.
And then at the end, so what I do is I cook the steak, and this is the really important thing. You cook the steak, You give it the squeeze test to tell it that it's medium rare. That's how I like it. Take it off, make sure it rests. Thinly, thinly slice it. Keep it on the plate with all those meat juices and pour over half the dressing and mix that through before you mix the whole thing together. And that
Pour half the dressing over the salad?
Over the meat, half of the salad, half of the meat before you mix the meat in.
Right.
And what this does, and I do this with all my kind of grilled meat salads, is it gives you that link. Otherwise, the meat just kind of sits there. It's been sliced and it can be a bit dry. So you mix it with the meat juices and half the dressing and then toss it into the salad with the rest of the dressing. And then I just garnish it with some feta cheese. And if you've got basil, or if you haven't got basil, you can put oregano or parsley.
I love it. That's so good. Thank you. Listeners, if you're going to have a go at this weekend, send me a picture. And Annabelle's website is Free Range Life. We've got a link to it on our website. And we've also got that info on the different cuts of beef on our afternoons page. Nice to talk to you. Thank you.
You take care, Jessie. Bye.
Annabelle Langbein, that was her recipe for Mediterranean beef salads.